Okay, we're here at South by Southwest. Again, I'm Dan Cruz, my colleague Brian Moon. I've been involved with the School of Music at the U of A for off and on for 22 years. Brian's a faculty member at the School of Music. And our project is about people's musical memories. So what we're finding and what we've known for some time is that everybody has memories that are connected with music that are in many cases very resonant, very meaningful to them. So that's what we would ask you to share with us today, is if either or both of you or the two of you together, have musical memories to share. But let's begin just by having you, Alethea, just introduce yourself to me, and then we'll have John do the same. Go ahead.
Sure. So I'm Alethea Ida. I am an associate professor at the University of Arizona School of Architecture. I'm also a designer and technologist, and I was trained as a pianist when I was very young, and I studied piano and almost minored in piano performance as an undergrad. So I have classical music training in my background.
I'm John Malenborg. I'm a music composer, producer, and an installation artist. In a past life, I worked in a recording studio as an engineer and, you know, have a little experience with the microphones and all the fun stuff that goes along with that. I've been listening to music fanatically for a good portion of my life, and it's definitely influenced me at many different phases of my life, and is very nostalgic.
Yeah. So is there a shared musical memory that the two of you would have? Sounds like you have something in mind.
Well, I would say. So I think, so John and I have known each other for, I guess it was maybe 2013 when we met. And in 2013, I learned that he was an electronic musician, had this passion with music. And in the year of 2014, he started to release once a week a piece that he had produced when he was young, composed and produced when he was young. So every week of the year of 2014, I wasn't living in the same city as him, and I was anxious to hear what it was going to be next, this experimental electronic music under the John Malenborg Project. And I was his biggest fan, I think.
Yeah.
Did you post them on Bandcamp?
Bandcamp, yeah.
And I was buying each one each week. Like, I wanted on my Bandcamp grouping. And I fell in love with him through his music, I think.
Oh, that's a story in itself. So tell us your side of the story.
At the time, I was 24, which is, I think, pretty young, but at the time I felt like a seasoned, musician, and felt like I had all these old, you know, archival cuts that I needed to just put out there. So I decided to go on a 52-week schedule, and, I was just putting out this music. Alethea and I had already been connected, and over time there was just a mutual shared interest in music, and although we were living on separate sides of the country, we slowly got more and more connected, and eventually, you know, that we began a relationship pretty much out of all that. So
yeah, by the end, so John was living in New York, where I had originally met him, because I was finishing my doctorate in upstate New York, and he was living there. By the end of 2014, when I had initially started my position at the University of Arizona, he was able to move out there at the end of 2014 and spend some time. And I think even then, so as I did have training as a pianist, and I had, when I was young, written a song when my first cat died. I still had the notes, the song notes. And he was interested in it, in like making it into an actual production and song. We still have to go back to that at some point, but it was also very melancholic and very sad. but that was the kind of thing. And he was working on many different pieces at that time, different albums, different things. And I kept having this interest of like wanting to find a way to merge the research and work I was doing in architecture with his passions in music and finding a way to actually collaborate at some point. But it took a long time to find that path.
I think it's like coding and computer programming might have been this missing link, right? Where we both had some interest and ability in those things, and it allowed us to kind of get into the lights and, you know, and then with your design expertise, sort of the form and function of, like, you know, what we made for this thing at South by Southwest. So we finally got there when it came to collaboration.
Yeah, so what happened was, I think the memory for us that's really shared is now manifested here with our project that's up on the roof at Fogo de Chao, and this podium. When we initially received the call at the U of A about this South by Southwest event that was supposed to originally occur in 2020, I immediately thought, oh, this is an amazing opportunity to find a way to collaborate, because South by Southwest for a musician is, like, pretty obvious, right? And then maybe for a technologist is also kind of pretty obvious. So, and it was all about this question of kind of featuring the Sonoran Desert in some way. So with his experience living there and my time there as well, we started to talk about how could we kind of emulate the sounds of the desert through these different qualities of the materials that I was working with, and the light, the different light conditions through sunsets and bright contrasts and things like that, the bright colors. So we came up with that collaboration for Shape, this soundscape with hydrogel-actuated podium electronics, and there's three really beautiful electronic music pieces that kind of speak to the desert or what it's about by him.
Yeah. But this also exists in a physical space?
It's a physical sculpture. It's a physical sculpture. So the base of the podium holds all the electronics and the coding and the little microcontrollers. And then the top of it is just the kind of feature of the lights interacting with the water-based materials, and the sound is coming out from the base with little speakers.
So what I'm hearing is that what's interesting about this story to me is the shared experience of John starting to compose music and put it out. Was it one a week?
At that time, yes.
One a week.
But that was prior music that you had composed when you were young.
Yeah. It was music I had made prior to that year, but I spent the whole year just releasing it one week at a time.
And that somehow that drew you together, this 52 weeks of...
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. You could say it was a 52-week courtship.
A long distance. I mean, that was the long distance way of communicating. And it was kind of like a pre-COVID thing. That was in 2014. But
we were social distancing.
There are people that stay connected remotely through things like that, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, many couples get together and they have a favorite song.
Okay.
But yours is a completely unique story.
I think since we're both creators in different ways, I think, and perhaps... I mean, you two are working at the School of Music. I'm sure you are perhaps at least dabbling in musical composition or teaching it or an expert on it, whatever it might be. I'm sure you understand to some degree this idea of when you're a creator, your mind is kind of focused really just on what can I do with my craft. And I would say the vast majority of my musical memories are somehow related to making music. You know, it's... I don't know if that's common, but that's... often how I see it, you know?
I would say the majority of people we interview, it's about hearing music. So what I haven't heard yet is I'm curious about your musical background or your training, influences, early exposures to music.
I'd love to talk about that. As an instrumentalist, I'm self-taught. I started playing guitar and keyboard somewhere at around age 13, 14. Those are self-taught. The musical software DAWs that I use, I started using it around the same time. I later, in my early 20s, was trained to use Pro Tools in a recording studio environment. So that was a formal training. But largely it was self-taught. As far as music influence goes, when I was younger, I listened to all sorts of strange things. Weird Al Yankovic, Is that the second reference of the day?
Well, guy, was it yesterday? Okay. There's a whole Weird Al Yankovic story that we got yesterday.
It's already posted online.
I'll find it, yeah. So any, you know, things like that. I was listening to DJ Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince. And, you know, I just had a somewhat eclectic assortment of music that I would enjoy as a kid. Then, as I got a little older, I was exposed to things like Phish and jam bands and kind of that morphing into the electronic side of that space. And I was also getting really deeply interested in funk music like George Clinton, Parliament Funkadelic, Prince.
Can you and I just trade CD collections sometime?
Yes.
If you even have any CDs.
I've often very few real physical left. But yeah.
Every so often I meet somebody and I say, let's just trade CDs. I used to say this all the time. I'll give you my 100 CDs, you give me your favorite 100, and we'll learn from one another.
Yeah, that would be
your
cool.
Influences.
We can make
so
a little Spotify playlist. So basically, I think the core of what I really enjoy about music is like electronic music and funk and the way those things interact. Also very much into things like New Wave, Gary Numan, that stuff, you know what I mean? So I think that sort of confluence of things has been continuously influencing my perspective. And I'm periodically interested in like newer iterations of things that refer to those things or sample those things. And I think it's just an interesting ongoing sort of relationship to music from the past and the future and just going in all different directions.
Yeah,
so
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Alethea, how about what would you say your musical influences are, or what you grew up with, or what turned you on to music?
Well, I think probably from the young age, just being really interested in playing piano and really I really delved into music through the classical music stance, and I did do quite a bit of performance and training through classical music, so I think things like Debussy, Chopin, things that emulate a bit more of these maybe more ephemeral kind of emotions or ephemeral visual. I don't think I have synesthesia. Maybe John does, but like when you play the music, you kind of begin to visualize certain things, because more and more I became a visual thinker, probably in part through the music. I was also a figure skater for many, many years, and so some of my memories with music are tied very closely to the songs that I would perform to in figure skating, and some of those It's a Wonderful World things like that. Yeah. So those, I mean, because you have to practice over and over and over again to, you know, kind of perfect your routine, and so those, like, I think the physical movement of the body was connected with those songs very closely, or different pieces of music that I would figure skate too.
It's funny, when I think of figure skating, the first thing that comes to mind is classical, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
I've just seen enough classical set to figure skating that's what I think of. But What a Wonderful World. That's because there's such a different feeling and a different emotion associated
with
that.
That's right. Okay, so the thing I was most attracted by with the John Malmberg project, the weekly release, was the experimental nature of it. So I think what John maybe didn't describe in detail about his background in his self-training is that he did just begin to experiment with electronic music you didn't have any formal training. It was a very natural approach, and there was something that was so raw and unheard, not anything I'd really heard before, of course. And there were some very long pieces, maybe like some might have been like 10 minutes long, but some of them were just, you know, these kind of brief experimental ideas. And I think there was just an energy. I thought there was, you know, this little bit of like genius and natural talent in them that you just don't come across in music that is overproduced or, you know, for the general public, like that's been kind of, sedated in some way or something. So,
when you were releasing your piece a week, What kind of an audience did you have for that, other than this lovely woman?
Not a wide audience. It wasn't being distributed on any, you know, platform beyond Bandcamp.
I mean, it sounds like it was a way for you to revisit the things you had written, self-expression.
Exactly. I think at that point in my mind, I felt like I was maybe entering a period when I would be sort of being or approaching from a more advanced perspective, or, you know, hoping to maybe sort of refine my craft, and or in the process of doing so. And I felt like it was important to kind of get out some of those earlier things, just because I thought they still had, and they still do to me today, have relevance just in the creative process. And I felt like there was just a lot of like worthy stuff that, at least in my mind, that was something I wanted to get out there at that time. Of course, now many of those things are no longer available, but they may become available someday in the future. Yeah,
I think there was a lot of emotion in each piece too, and
sure,
somehow tied to the name. Well, however you would name a piece, I think kind of maybe elicited that representation. You'd always had some kind of image as well that you would curate. So yeah, it's interesting to know. Like yeah, you as a musician, you're always thinking about the concept as well of the piece. And so I think that idea about like conceptualization of music, I was really intrigued by, because in architecture we also kind of think about concepts first. Like, what is a concept? What is the kind of thesis or idea about this work? Like,
and sometimes it can happen in either direction, where you do the work and then you sort of see something or sort of identify it with something as far as imagery or theme otherwise. So.
So now I'm curious, what are the titles of some of the 52 pieces?
That's a good question. Let me try to think of some of the more outlandish ones if I could.
My mind will blow, or your mind will blow, or... And then there was some kind of church, one of them.
Oh, okay, this is a good one.
Yeah.
Cerebral Astronautic Cathedral.
Yeah, that was
a good title, I guess.
That's a phrase... That's an original phrase.
Probably. Yeah, so that's one.
Yeah. There's lots of
things. So I just got to get back to one of the... What was the thing you mentioned earlier about the cat?
Oh, my cat. Yeah.
There's a poem about a cat. What was that? I missed...
There was a musical piece that I wrote. It was primarily a melody, I believe, that I wrote as a child when my cat passed away. When we were living together, I pulled it out because I still had it. I think I was unpacking or something when we had moved, and came across it and shared it with John. And he's like, oh, this is interesting. Yeah, I could turn this into something, you know. So maybe. Yeah.
We'll come back to it, yeah, in 20, maybe this year, maybe next
yeah.
year.
Yeah. I think I was 8 or 9, yeah. Yeah, my first cat. Now, more important, I lost another very dear cat to me last year, which, yeah, was more devastating, because that cat had been with me everywhere for 15 years, 16 years, and was my little partner. And I haven't written a piece of music, but maybe this is the time. Maybe that's the piece that comes forward, and maybe it's a dedication to Sammy.
Music is a way of processing things. That's what we've heard from many people. Grief, a loss of a cat, even a cat, right? A change in one's life. Music often gets us through transitions. Part of what I'm hearing is that you're taking all these old pieces you've written and doing something with them and getting them out there helped you move to the next stage in your compositional development.
I would say so, yeah. And I think that's something that can recur. You know, you go through little eras or periods where you're maybe emphasizing one thing or you're being called to do another, and at a certain point you kind of just want to create a capsule or a time capsule where you can sort of, in the historical sense, define your eras as they were and move on from them, or refer to them later, or, you know, any combination.
Yeah, I find music, like playing piano for me, is very therapeutic. I mean, this is a little odd to talk about, but I think I could share this. There was a time when I was actually in the hospital for a PTSD diagnosis, and there was a piano for the time that I was there that I was able to play, because I had a lot of pieces memorized, and it was really helpful. It was like a really wonderful like kind of therapy to be able to do that. And I think I, in terms of my memory, and maybe because it was maybe not very secure of a time, but I think I was playing really well.
If you do say
and
so
the
yourself.
Other people that were, you know, staying there as well were like loving it.
Oh, nice.
So
you
it
may
was
have
really
helped them with. They may have helped
maybe,
them with.
Maybe, yeah.
The
yeah, music.
Yeah,
definitely
I remember
is like
playing
healing.
Ravel, and yeah, it just. Yeah. I think that emotion. Yeah, it just. It is very therapeutic. Yeah.
Yeah. And it felt like kind of we didn't know it necessarily at first that we would do it together, but it just sort of seemed sensible that we would do it together since we came here together kind of on the premise of something that directly is involved with music. It's very cool to do this as a team. So
yeah, thank you.
I think next you should write a piece about being interviewed by Dan and Dan. About
it's
music.
Conceivable. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
I'm gonna stop us now.